This podcast is sponsored by Canaccord Genuity Wealth Management, award-winning wealth managers who go above and beyond to support and guide you. Visit candowealth.com to start building your wealth with confidence.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Isabel Hardman and I'm joined by Katie Balls and James Forsyth. Well, the Indian variant seems to be receding, not in terms of the number of cases, but in terms of the amount of concern it is causing government. James, give us an update on what ministers and government scientists are now thinking.
So the vaccine effectiveness figures for the Indian variant are reassuring, particularly after the second dose, which I think explains why there's such an emphasis on trying to get second doses to people. I also think there's a feeling that the fact that you're not seeing hospitals, not in Bolton itself, but in the surrounding area, aren't seeing a big surge in cases is also being seen as a reassuring sign. And so I think there is a bit more optimism that you might get a kind of fuller June 21st. You know, we've talked before in this podcast about there are two different versions of June 21st. There's a version of June 21st where the working from home instruction goes, where masks go everywhere but public transport, social distancing goes, meaning that pubs and restaurants can be full. Or there's a very different June 21st where the legal limit on the number of people at a gathering goes, but you still have to have social distancing, you still have to have masks, people are still being encouraged to work from home. I think in government, I mean, there is a greater optimism that the June 21st that we are heading towards looks more like the former than the latter.
Katie, this is good news for Conservative MPs as well, isn't it? Because they had been worried that Boris Johnson was going to end up imposing more restrictions or delaying the timetable. So it's good news for harmony in the Conservative Party, if nothing else.
Yes, I think that ultimately there were concerns that everything could be delayed a bit. I think we'd been surprised if there'd been too much added in, but local lockdowns are particularly divisive amongst MPs who are affected by it. So I think the fact that not only does the roadmap currently seem likely to stay on course, I think the fact that also you don't seem to have the need for local lockdowns in places like Bolton is also going to be helpful in terms of the sense in the party. I suppose going forward, I don't think we're going to get this definite confirmation that June 21st is going ahead yet, but I do think this week you will hear more positive sounds on it, and you could start to hear about things like the social distancing review, what that means in practice. We had the Prime Minister last week suggesting that they realised that in some cases you do need to give notice on plans. So I think when it comes to things like mass events and, dare I say it, weddings, we might start to actually get a bit of a guidance fairly soon on how these things would operate if everything does go to plan in the next few weeks.
Now, James, I mentioned good news for the Conservative Party harmony, but we have one event this week which is unlikely to be good for the government, particularly Boris Johnson. Dominic Cummings is giving evidence to a joint meeting of the Science and Technology and Health Select Committees on Wednesday morning, where he is expecting, according to the billings in various newspapers and other media outlets, to exact revenge on his former boss. Is it really going to live up to the expectations that everyone's got, sort of ordering in tons of popcorn ready for this select committee session?
Well, I mean, Dominic Cummings has done a kind of quite a long tweet thread. I think it's 55 tweets when I last looked, setting out the kind of broad philosophical thrust of what he wants to say. And I mean, the bad news for Boris Johnson is that he obviously intends to be critical of Boris Johnson and the delays in his decision making. I think the consolation for Boris Johnson is that a large part of his argument is the institutional failings that led to this. And I think that in a way, if you're talking a lot about what was wrong with the way that the approach the Department of Health took, Public Health England, the lack of data the government had, all of these institutional failings make it harder to say that it is Boris Johnson's fault that this happened or that the situation ended up like this. And so I think that while the hearing is certainly going to be uncomfortable for Boris Johnson, and given Dominic Cummings' kind of relish for political theatre, there are clearly going to be some kind of blockbuster moments in this. Given the broader case that he wants to make about how ill-suited Whitehall was to handling this, I think that means that all the blame can't hang on Boris Johnson, something that Dominic Cummings himself acknowledged in one of the tweets he sent yesterday, saying that, you know, although he is hugely critical of Boris Johnson in all sorts of ways, you can't get around the fact that this was almost a systems failure as well.
Katie, as James says, it's not just Boris Johnson's problem, is it? Dominic Cummings has previously taken aim at Health Secretary Matt Hancock, for instance. Is that going to damage his standing and other ministers who end up getting criticised in this hearing standing, or might it actually enhance their standing in Boris Johnson's eyes, given that Dominic Cummings is now not particularly welcome as a voice in Westminster?
Well, I think on things like what Dominic Cummings might say about Matt Hancock, there is a general sense, not just from Dominic Cummings, but if you speak to lots of people who are working in Downing Street, were working in Downing Street at the time, there is a lot of frustration at the Department of Health. Now, the Department of Health and those in it will turn around and say, well, no, we weren't the problem. But I don't think either side will suggest that that relationship was harmonious between Number 10 and the Department of Health. So I don't think Dominic Cummings talking about those issues is particularly going to surprise Boris Johnson. He'll have been plenty aware of it. I think where the evidence could be interesting is there's lots that's been made about the fact that probably Dominic Cummings isn't the best messenger if you want to damage the government, in the sense that although he will know a lot, there's an interesting YouGov poll today which I think says only 14% of voters who were surveyed trust what he says. So perhaps it'll have less impact coming straight from Dominic Cummings than if it appeared in different means. But I think there will still, you will have comments on lockdown, but I also imagine these kind of vignettes in the side, such as, you know, the story at the weekend that apparently Number 10 are worried they're going to say Boris Johnson was busy writing his Shakespeare grand book and that was why he missed meetings, and now people are finding various people's PMQs from the dates when he was allegedly looking at Shakespeare, where he randomly talks about Shakespeare, and wondering if that's all linked. So I think things like that can probably undermine politicians and ministers if there are damaging incidents like this, which will stick in people's minds. That won't really matter, I don't think, who says it, if they can be backed up through other means.
And moving on to a completely different topic, James, Belarus has been condemned by a number of Western countries for diverting a plane that was flying over its territory in order to arrest an opposition journalist. Now, EU leaders are due to discuss their response to what has been called by some as a hijacking. This is quite a serious business, isn't it?
This is a hugely serious matter, because the point about this is this was a EU airline, Ryanair, flying between two EU capitals. And the plane is essentially forced out of the sky by fighter jets from the Belarusian Air Force. And I think this is a real threat to the international order. If you're in a situation where any plane flying through the airspace of a country can be forced down and people taken off that flight and arrested, that has huge international consequences. I think it's very hard to believe that Belarus would have done this without a wink and a nod from Moscow, to say the least. So again, is it safe for international flights to fly over Russia? A huge number of flights fly over Siberian fly over Siberia, which is obviously part of Russian airspace. So are we going to have to divert all of these planes from there? That's kind of, I mean, there's a valid question here. I mean, there's a real test for whether the West can come up with a series of a response that is so swift and so strict that it deters any other autocratic regime anywhere in the world from attempting something like this, because this is a massive violation of international norms. Because you are flying between two EU capitals, this is not a stopover on a flight or anything like that. This is a civilian jet being forced out of the sky by military planes. If international order cannot respond to this, we are heading increasingly to a lawless world.
Thank you, James, and thank you, Katie, and thank you for listening.